Bhakti Vrindakita. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinatha Nikunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Maitri Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamai Dhuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti Vrindakita Ki Jai. Gaur Premanand. All glorious to the assembly. 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 All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya Vrindala, Srimati Bhakti Vinaya Swami Niti Namade, Namaste, Sarasvati Devi, Gauravani Pacharne, Nivase Susundi Vadi Vaspajade Satani, Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Chao Padkamalam, Sri Guru and Vaishnava Vishcha, Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana, Raghunatam Vikam Samasajivam. Sadvaitam Sadvaritam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpa Jubhischa Kipa Sindhavi Evacha Patitana Bhavana Evyo Vaishnavi Vimoham Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Texas, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 11, Text 14. This is from the Perfect Society for Social Classes. Viprasaya yadanini.
Viprasaya
sad anyasya pratigraha. Ragno vrittir prajagoptur avi pradva karadibi. Vibhrasya of the Brahmana, Adhyayana Adini, reading the Vedas, etc. Sat, six, to study the Vedas, to teach the Vedas, to worship the deity, to teach others how to worship, to accept charity and to give charity. Anyasya, of those other than the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas. Apratigraha, without accepting charity from others. The Kshatriyas may execute the five other occupational duties prescribed for the Brahmanas. Ragnaha of the Kshatriya, Vrittihi, the means of livelihood, Prajaguptuhu, who maintain the subjects, Aviprat, from those who are not Brahmanas, Va, or Kara Adibihi, by levying revenue taxes, customs duties, fines for punishment, etc.
By levying revenue taxes, customs duties, fines for punishment, etc.
I was thinking you had a perfect memory, and then I see you have a perfect
memory.
Come on here. Why is this memory so much better than everybody else's? Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. So before we read this, just this section is about how the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas, and we'll also talk a little bit today about the Vaishyas and the Sudras, how they can get their livelihood. What's the process of livelihood? So of course this is a very important question for us even today. What is the proper way to get your livelihood so that one will be connected with Krishna? So translation. For a Brahmana, there are six occupational duties. Anybody remember what they are? You have an excellent memory, yes. So what are the six occupational duties of a Brahmana?
Study the Vedas, teach the Vedas.
Study the Vedas, teach the Vedas. Somebody else? Without looking at the book. Worshipping deities and?
Teaching
others and? Getting charity and? Giving charity. Does this remind us of anything?
Nectar of instruction.
Yes, nectar of instruction. And what do you have there?
Dadati
pratigrinati, kuyam akyakti priktati. All right, and what are those six?
Giving and receiving gifts.
Giving and receiving prasad and?
Feeling one's mind and requiring
code, giving and receiving knowledge and instruction. Is it very similar, isn't it? Okay. So for a Brahmana, again, we'll start from the beginning of the translation. For a Brahmana, there are six occupational duties. A Kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other five of these duties. So he can give charity, he can worship the deity, he can teach others to worship the deity, he can study the Vedas, he can teach the Vedas. A king or kshatriya is not allowed to levy taxes on brahmanas, but he may make his livelihood by levying minimal taxes, customs duties, and penalty fines upon his other subjects. So, because you would ask, well, if the kshatriya can't accept charity, but he can do the others, how will he live? What will be his income? Okay, we'll read this again. For a brahmana, there are six occupational duties. A kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other five of these duties. A king or kshatriya is not allowed to levy taxes on brahmanas, but he may make his livelihood by levying minimal taxes, customs duties, and penalty fines upon his other subject. Purport. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the position of brahmanas and kshatriyas as follows. Brahmanas has six occupational duties, of which three are compulsory. Anybody want to guess which of the three are compulsory? Now remember, each of them, there was, with the six, there was doing and giving. So which do you think are compulsory, the doing or the giving?
Doing.
Teaching others.
Well, it's interesting. Two of them are going to be doing, and one of them is going to be giving. Isn't that interesting? They're not all in line with the doing or all in line with the giving. So he says here, Prabhupada says, namely studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, so that you're just doing, you're studying, you're worshipping, you're not teaching, and giving charity. So it's not studying the Vedas, worshipping the deities, and accepting charity. Those aren't the three that are compulsory. The three that are compulsory are studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, and giving charity. Now, how would you give charity then? Where would your charity come from?
From the Vedas and from the deities.
But how would you get this money to give in charity if you're not accepting charity?
Does it have to be money? We always think of terms of charity as money.
No, it doesn't have to be money. But if you were teaching and engaging others to worship the deity, that would come in the other two categories. So it couldn't be that kind of... I mean, normally what you're saying would be 100% correct, but in this context that wouldn't work, because then that would be the other two categories. I mean, it could be time. It could be service. What would be accepting charity here, then, I understand, as making an endeavor to collect charity. So that could be an occupation. You know, what's your occupation? Like, I go out and beg. Just like Mahaprabhu, when he was traveling in South India, he begged, yes? He was begging. What Brahmana do we know who did not beg? Raghunath Das Goswami got to a point that he was not. He gradually gave up that begging. Who else? Madhavendra Puri. So Madhavendra Puri was not begging. So that's how I understand this. That when it's, because you can't give charity unless you receive charity. Unless you're wealthy in some other way. So if someone's, I understand here, an occupational duty of collecting charity means you're actively going out. So start from the beginning again. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains the position of Brahmanas and Kshatriyas as follows. Brahmanas have six occupational duties, of which three are compulsory. Namely, studying the Vedas, worshipping the deity, and giving charity. By teaching, by inducing others to worship the deity, and by accepting gifts, the Brahmanas receive the necessities of life. This is also confirmed in the Manu Samhita. Snanam tu karmanam asya trini karmani jivika. Yajanadya panechaiva visudachcha pratigraha. Of the six occupational duties of the Brahmanas, three are, this is repeating the same thing, three are compulsory, namely worship of the deity, study of the Vedas, and the giving of charity. In exchange, a Brahmana should receive charity, and this should be his means of livelihood. So Prabhupada first quotes Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and then quotes Manu Samhita to repeat the same thing. Going on. A Brahmana cannot take up any professional occupational duty for his livelihood. So we're going to talk about what exactly that means, because Brahmanas could be doctors and astrologers and counselors, which is what we normally think of today as professional duties. The Shastras especially stress, going on, that if one claims to be a Brahmana, he cannot engage in the service of anyone else. Otherwise, he at once falls from his position and becomes a Shudra. So again, we're going to look at what this means, because everybody is serving everybody. I mean, if I'm teaching you how to worship the deity, I'm serving you. Yes, if I'm teaching you the Vedas, I'm serving you. Everybody is serving. Jivara Swarupara Krishna and Nichidash. We're constitutionally servers. So what does this exactly mean? That he cannot engage in the service of anyone else, otherwise he at once falls in the position and becomes a Shudra. It doesn't even become a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. It becomes a Shudra. Going on. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami belong to a very respectable family, but because they engage in the service of Nawab Hussain Shah, not even his ordinary clerks, but his ministers, they were ostracized from Brahminical society. Indeed, they became like Mohammedans and even changed their names. Unless a Brahmin is very pure, he cannot accept charity from others. Charity should be given to those who are pure. Even if one is born in a family of Brahmanas, if one acts as a Shudra, one cannot accept charity, for this is strictly prohibited. So this relates to yesterday's verse that Maharaj spoke on, where Maharaj pointed out that there, instead of gunan karma, it was saying janma and karma. And Prabhupada's making the point here. It cannot be just janma. It has to also be karma. It has to be what you're doing. Okay, going on. Although the Kshatriyas are almost as qualified as the Brahmanas, even they cannot accept charity. This is strictly prohibited in this verse by the word apratigraha. What to speak of the lower social orders, even the Kshatriyas must not accept charity. The king, so then how will they live? That is the question. The king or government may levy taxes upon the citizens in various ways, by revenue duties, customs duties, realization of fines, and so on, provided the king is able to give full protection to his subjects to ensure the security of their life and property. So the brahmanas can get something, but they have to give something, or they have to be something. The kshatriyas can get something, but they also have to be something.
Interesting.
Yes?
It's interesting. Excuse me.
No, no.
That the purpose of leadership of the king is to please the rajas.
Ah.
It's a very interesting point, because nowadays it's just the opposite.
It's the opposite. So Kesha Bharati Maharaj is saying, for those of you on the internet, that the function of leadership is to please the prajas. And that's what's being emphasized here, whereas nowadays the conception is quite the opposite. Going on, unless he is able to give protection, he cannot levy taxes. However, a king must not levy any tax upon the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, which would make sense, because kshatriya is giving them charity. It doesn't make any sense to give them charity and then levy tax. Viprasyada yanadini sad anyasya pratigraha ragno vrittir praja goptur avipradva karadibhi. For a brahmana, there are 6 occupational duties. A kshatriya should not accept charity, but he may perform the other 5 of these duties. A king or kshatriya is not allowed to levy taxes on brahmanas, but he may make his livelihood by levying minimal taxes, customs duties, and penalty fines upon his other subjects. So if we were to compile a list of the most often asked questions in the Hare Krishna movement, this question of how do I earn my occupation in such a way that is compatible with Krishna consciousness is very close to the top of the list. It's up there probably with the most 10 asked questions. And some variety of that, how can I be Krishna conscious at work and in the family? How do I become Krishna conscious in my ordinary life? That's definitely up there with one of the top 5 questions that people ask. It's a very big concern. If we had a society organized so that, according to these Varnashram principles, then that question wouldn't arise. This question arises because we're living in a society that's not organized by Varnashram principles. And here we're looking specifically at Varna. And the science of Varna gives a way by which one can spiritualize one's livelihood. And this is important if we read in 9:30 in the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada talks about that when the living entity is conditioned, he has 2 kinds of activities, conditional and constitutional. As for protecting the body, certainly there are different activities. I'm not reading every word. Even for the devotees, in connection with the conditional life, and such activities are called conditional. Besides these, one who is engaged in Krishna consciousness has activities which are called transcendental. In the conditioned state, sometimes devotional service and the conditional service in relation to the body will parallel one another, but again, sometimes the activities become opposed to one another. As far as possible, a devotee is very cautious so that he does not do anything that could disrupt his wholesome condition. Again, I wasn't reading every single word. But Prabhupada is making the point here that even as devotees, we have to maintain the body. That's a conditional activity. That's not an eternal activity. We don't have a body eternally, a material body. Thank you, Krishna. these religions that say the perfection of life is your material body comes out of the grave and lives forever. I don't get that. I don't see why that's attractive. Or even the Sarenikashipu that wanted his body to live forever. Again, I just don't relate to that at all. It's like, why would I want to be in this body forever? The less time, the better. So it's a prison, you know. It's like saying, I want to live in a prison forever. Hare Krishna. You know, there's this hellish planet where you have to swim in this river of blood and hair and pus. And I'm thinking, well, I'm doing that all the time. So I don't know why anybody would want to have that go on and on. But anyway, as long as we're in this body, it's our duty to maintain the body, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami when he was thinking to commit suicide. He said, your body belongs to me. How can you destroy somebody else's property? He said, that's just basic moral principles. You can't destroy someone else's property. Not only not destroy it, but we have to maintain it. Now, one thing to take into consideration is the ashrams, which was mentioned in the previous verse, that the members of the different varnas follow the ashrams. But in three of the ashrams, there's no effort for livelihood. So this discussion about Varna only applies to the Grihastha Ashram. The Brahmachari Ashram is what? You're a student. So students don't earn a livelihood. I mean, unless you're in modern society, maybe if you're a student till you're 30, you also get a job. But generally, students don't earn a livelihood. And in every society, we allow children and young teenagers to go to school and not have to worry about a livelihood. They're maintained. They're maintained by their parents. The schools are maintained by the society. And the traditional brahmacharya, the teacher maintained the students. The students collected alms for the teacher, but the teacher maintained the students. The students didn't keep any alms. Now, in brahmachari life, you're preparing for livelihood. Prabhupada says in the second canto that in the brahmachari ashram, one should be taught values of life and specific preparation for a livelihood, because most of the people in the brahmachari ashram will not skip the grihastha ashram. And in the grihastha ashram is livelihood. Then vanaprastha means retired. So even in ordinary life, when you're retired, what are you retired from? Earning a livelihood. Right? Just like whenever I go into a foreign country, they say, what is your occupation? I always say, retired. I mean, they want to know, are you going to make money in your country? Recently, when I went in the UK, he said, are you going to spend money in our country? But retired means you're not earning a livelihood anymore. And sannyas means you're dead. You're civilly dead. Right? So students, retired people, and dead people don't earn a livelihood, as far as I know.
But how are they going to get donations if they're dead?
That's a very interesting question. Maharaj just asked, how will anyone give him donations if he's dead? So anyway, the point is that this idea of livelihood only applies in the grihastha ashram. It has no application in the other ashrams. So varna, because varna is about livelihood. That's what it's about. It's about how you earn your livelihood. Therefore, it only applies to the grihastha ashram. There's no consideration of varna. In the brahmachari ashram, there's consideration of varna in terms of what livelihood are you going to be trained for. But not in the vanaprastha ashram or the sannyas ashram. When the kshatriyas take vanaprastha and the brahmanas take vanaprastha, it's exactly the same, isn't it? Is there any difference in vanaprastha duties, whether you're kshatriya or brahman? It becomes irrelevant. I mean, Bharat Maharaj ran into trouble because he still had this mood of protection, yes? When he renounced. Oh, I'm a protector! No, you're supposed to have retired from this. Sita made this point to Ram when he was in the forest, and he promised the sages to protect them against the rishis. And Sita said, that's fine, I don't mind you. Prabhupada says, all glories to the assembled devotees includes the children. That's fine. So Ram said, well, I'm not really a vanaprastha, even though I'm vanaprastha, living in the vana. I haven't really retired. I'm here in exile, and I'm helping Bharat. And therefore, I'm still doing kshatriya duties. In fact, some of the demons would criticize like that. They say, oh, what is this ascetic doing in the forest with weapons? Why is this? He's coming here as a renunciate with matted hair and tree bark, and yet he's carrying weapons. It's incompatible. So you can ask, how did the brahmacharis and the vanaprasthas and the sannyasis earn their livelihood? They earn their livelihood, of course, through the livelihood of the grihasthas. Through the livelihood of the grihasthas. The grihasthas maintain. Just like, again, we do this in society in general. The parents and the society and the taxes maintain the students. The taxes pay for the education. And a person gets some pension to maintain themselves in their retirement. And then also the young children maintain the elderly people in their retirement. I mean, I think our only equivalent to sannyas in modern age is like an old age home where you're preparing for death. That's like our modern idea of sannyas. You give away all your possessions, live in an old age home. And again, then the society is maintaining you, the government taxes are maintaining you, your children are maintaining you, your pension is maintaining you. But you're not actively doing anything to gain a livelihood. All right, so just to get that out of the way, we're talking here about the grihastha ashram and only about the grihastha ashram. We are not referring here to anyone in the brahmachari ashram, the vanaprastha ashram, or the sannyas ashram. All right, so why do we need to have these divisions in the Grihastha Ashram of Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra? Why not just say, Yat Karoshi, Yat Ignashi, Yat Grihastha Vidasi, Yat Yattapasa Sikanta, Yat Tat Purushva Madarpanam? Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, whatever austerities you do, do that for Krishna. We could just say to the Grihasthas, whatever you do to maintain yourself, because Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, no one can maintain their body without work. We should just mention the brahmacharis, vanaprastha, and sannyasis are also working. It's not that they're not working, but they're not working for a livelihood. They are doing only activities of bhakti. So what is the necessity of taking the activities done for a livelihood? That is the purpose, to earn a livelihood. As I say, brahmacharis, vanaprastha, sannyasis, they're not working for the purpose of getting a livelihood. What is the idea of taking those activities done for a livelihood and dividing them into four categories? So I've meditated on this a lot. I mean, if we were to list all the different livelihoods one could have in 2014 in Texas, if we were to go to a career guidance center and ask what are all the different livelihoods, we'd get how many? 10,000, 100,000? There's all kinds of interesting livelihoods that we don't even think about, right? And varieties of varieties. I mean, like let's say that you're a waiter or a waitress in a restaurant, but then you could be like a flight attendant, which is almost the same thing, but it's a little different, isn't it? So there's all these even varieties of occupations. And there's definitely tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of occupations. So what is the benefit of dividing them into four categories? Why not just say to everybody, whatever you do, do it for Krishna? And we see the problem with that, again, is that this is the big question. How do I do it? You know, I'm a flight attendant. How do I do that for Krishna? I work in a bank. How do I do that for Krishna? I teach in a public school. How do I do that for Krishna? How do I offer it to Krishna? So these four varnas, they're very broad. I mean, really, the Brahmana varna encompasses a lot of different things, as does each of the varnas are very broad. But these broad categories in which you could place all of the occupations, except for sinful occupations, you couldn't put in there, you know, prostitute, hunter, mafia, don, that wouldn't, you know, alcohol shop owner, you couldn't fit into those four. But other than the sinful activities, and as soon as you put those into the four, then it gives you, this is how you do it. This is how you use your occupation in Krishna's service. Just like Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, he says that everything has to be sacrificed. He said, if you don't perform sacrifice, there's no happiness in this life or the next. He says, sarvavitam brahma nityayagya pratistitam. If you want to find God, who's everywhere, look where there's sacrifice. That's where he always is staying. And then Krishna, in the fourth chapter, details all different kinds of sacrifices. And at the end, he says, Guru, Guru, who can teach you what sacrifice you should perform? You can look at the list and say, oh, I'll do the sacrifice of offering the incoming breath into the outgoing and remaining in trance without breathing. But Prabhupada would say, no, that's not your sacrifice. So there's different kinds of sacrifices for different people. The essence is the same, but so this is how to sacrifice and how to enjoy, because Krishna says without sacrifice, you cannot be happy in this life and the next. So these varnas tell you, this is the way that you're going to satisfy your material desires. Let's be frank about this. This is how you're going to satisfy your material desires. This is how you're going to perform sacrifice. This is how you're going to become happy materially. And if you do it right, this is also how you can achieve liberation. Amrita, to enjoy nectar.
Amrita, pleasure.
Pleasure. From doing the sacrifice, to enjoy nectar even in this life. Okay. First question is, why? Why? Are there different ways of earning your livelihood according to the varnas? Why do we say, if your occupation fits in the Brahmin group, you do it this way. If your occupation fits in the Kshatriya group, you do it this way. It's matching modes. It's matching modes. Because you're being given something that fits you. You know, in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the top is self-actualization, where you find, this is my place. This is where I fit. This is where I belong. We can say that our ultimate goal, when we talk about prema paramarthamaham, our ultimate goal is prema. What exactly do we mean by that? What we mean by that is I discover who I am. Not just in a general way, aham brahmasmi, but I discover specifically who I am in relationship to Krishna. Not who I am not in relationship to Krishna, but who I am in relationship to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur details 11 aspects of our identity. I have an age. I have certain colors that I like. I have an eternal family. I have a certain particular relationship with Krishna, and then serving Krishna in that relationship. Who am I, and what service do I? That's prema. That I awaken my particular relationship of love with Krishna. Is that correct? Is that the goal of our bhakti process? To become self-realized and use our real self in loving service to Krishna?
Yeah, the goal is to please Krishna.
To please Krishna. Yeah. Well, otherwise it's not loving service. Yeah. It's just service. Is that our goal? Everybody agree with that? To awaken my eternal identity and to use that in loving service unequally, just to please Krishna? Yes? Yes? So this idea of awakening who I am and finding my place, it's interesting that even if a person does that materially, they feel some happiness. Isn't that strange? Even if you're an atheist, even if you're a demon, if you figure out your temporary material identity and you use that in the service of something greater than yourself, you'll feel happier than if you're not using your nature or if you're using it selfishly. Isn't that interesting? It's like you're getting a little bit of a reflection or something. So this concept of who am I and where do I fit for the service of the greater whole, who am I, where do I fit for the service of the greater whole, even if you have this dim, perverted reflection of that, it's more satisfying than not knowing where I fit and just serving myself. So even though this is a temporary identity in the modes, whether one's a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, has nothing to do with who I am eternally, absolutely nothing whatsoever. Still, if you figure that out and find your place, yes?
You quoted the verse before, that in that process of giving, no matter what it is, that the absolute truth is contained within it, so therefore you feel better.
So Keshavarti Maharaj is saying that when you're giving to the absolute truth, that then you're going to feel better.
Well, even if you're not giving to the absolute truth, if you're giving.
If you're giving, as soon as you're giving, because nitya yagya pratistita. And they're linked, and yajna and amrita is linked.
Yes.
So as soon as you're sacrificing, it's linked. And my dear friend, you cannot sacrifice something that you don't have. Does this make sense? Okay? I cannot sacrifice your chug or your car. I can only sacrifice what I have. Therefore, this concept of finding who am I and then sacrificing that for a higher cause brings happiness. And this phenomenon is described materially by a researcher called Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi as flow. That when a person is acting according to their nature and sacrificing that nature for a higher cause, something bigger than themselves, they get into a state called flow where time and space disappear. What does that sound like? They're totally focused on what they're doing and time and space disappear. What does that sound like? What state does that sound like? We're talking about materialists, okay? An atheist, a demon. But even if they're doing that, they'll enter into a little something that's like samadhi. Fascinating, isn't it? So this is why, and we'll come back to this, don't worry, I'm not going to leave it at the atheists and the demons. This is why the activities and the means of livelihood are designated according to the modes. Because the modes is what constitute our current temporary identity. Karana guna sangasya. By associating with certain modes, we have gotten this particular body and this particular psychology, which although foreign to us, is a temporary identity. So we want to have a particular kind of work and a particular kind of making a livelihood that fits our particular modes. And as soon as we do that, boom, we're properly situated. Now that's the why it's delineated into these four. And then many, 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 many subcategories. Now what is the what? So we have the why. The what? If you want to know what is it, what is my occupation, then you have to think of what do I like to play with? What's my pleasure? Do you like to play with ideas and thoughts and knowledge and concepts? I mean, I love doing that. I love taking ideas and playing with them, categorizing them in different ways and analyzing them and synthesizing them. And I love playing with ideas. Does that make sense? I'd much rather play with ideas than eat cheesecake. Or see a sunset or something like that. So then there are people who like to play with people. They like to take care of people. They like to make sure that people have a nice place to live, that they're properly educated, that they have medical care. They want to take care of people, not so much on an individual counseling with sharing knowledge, but they want to take care of all the people's material and spiritual needs. That's their play. Then there are people who like to play with natural resources and animals and wealth. They like to increase wealth. They like to play with money in its original form as land and grains and animals and water and air. And they like to take those natural resources and transform them into usable and honest wealth. Then there are people who like to play with things of arts and functions. They like to play with things, like to make furniture or to build buildings. Or they like to play with music or with art. They like to play with things of beauty and function. They want to provide beauty and function. So this tells you what is the category. What do you like to play with? Do you like to play with knowledge and ideas? Do you like to play with people? Do you like to play with natural resources and animals and wealth? Or do you like to play with beauty and function, providing beauty and function for the society? Now, all of us like to do a little of all of these. Most people like some money. Most people like some beauty and function. Most people like other people, and most people like ideas. But what really do you like to play with? What would you choose to do? Okay, you've got a whole day, you can do whatever you want. What will you do? So that's the what. Then the how you get your livelihood from this needs to match the modes. And that's the main subject of today's verse and purport. Okay, you're playing with ideas, you're playing with caring for people, you're playing with natural resources and wealth, you're playing with beauty and function. How are you going to draw your livelihood from that? And if you don't draw your livelihood from that in a way that matches those modes and matches that function, you won't be able to get your pleasure out of it. And you won't be able to offer a proper human sacrifice. If you try to play with care of people, but you don't earn your livelihood in the way prescribed in Shastra, you won't enjoy playing with people. You won't enjoy caring for people. And you won't be easily able to offer any sacrifice. If you enjoy playing with money and natural resources and generating wealth, but if you don't earn your livelihood the way that's prescribed in the Shastra, you won't get the full pleasure out of your activities and you won't be able to offer it properly in sacrifice. So that's why there's this Varna system. This Varna system says, okay, this is what you like to enjoy. This is your modes. You want to get the full enjoyment out of it? Here's how to offer it in sacrifice. And there's a different way for each thing. It's not the same. You don't offer in sacrifice the arts and the function the same way you offer in sacrifice caring for people, the same way you offer in sacrifice caring for natural resources, the same way you offer in sacrifice caring for knowledge. It's different. And if you're not careful about this, you won't feel satisfied. And your ability to offer becomes compromised. So therefore, these strict instructions are given. Let's start at the bottom here, even though the Shudras and the Vaishyas are not mentioned here. We'll start at the bottom and do that briefly. So the Shudras, their interest is what? Kama. They're interested in enjoyment. Shudras want pretty fast, pious pleasure of Vedic Sutra. They're not interested in working really, really hard for a faraway fruit. They don't have that much of a passion for sustained determination for faraway fruit. They want very quick fruits. They want very quick fruits. So the higher grade Shudras, interestingly enough, do not have masters. If we think about the people who are painters or potters or even, you know, some guy in Govardhan town who's sitting on the side of the street repairing flip-flops, he doesn't have a master. He sets his own hours. He's his own boss. But you're doing what other people want you to do, aren't you? They're giving you the order. You're doing it according to their order, generally. Yes? And the sutra is because somebody very affected by ignorance is also going to be very affected by fear. They're not going to be able to wait a long time for the fruit. Passion will give you sustained determination if you can see the fruit. Ignorance doesn't give you that sustained determination even if you can see the fruit. Your determination doesn't last very long. So somebody who's a sutra, they need to be getting some money regularly without fear. They can't be worried about where I'm going to get my money. It's too much for them. They can't handle it. So the shudra needs to have some kind of regular income. You know, this is our main way that people are maintained today. You have a regular income. You know you're going to get paid whatever it is, $1,000 a week. You can count on that. And okay, you have security. You don't have this fear, and it's coming fairly quickly. You're not working for something in the future. Okay, we go to the Vaishyas. And the Vaishyas, because they have more passion, they can more work for a long-term fruit. So they're able to plant in one season and get the harvest in another season. And they can be enthusiastic about planting for a faraway season. And having some influence of Rajaguna, which is piety, material dharma, they're able much more to feel, I'm dependent on God and my activities. I'm not dependent on some other human paying me on a regular basis. So I'm going to plant and depend on God. They're much more able to do this with Rajaguna. Remember, Rajaguna means king. Rajaguna, we often think of Rajaguna as something very evil, but it isn't. Rajaguna is very much in the realm of dharma and piety and morals and ethics and justice. And because the Vaishyas have this Rajaguna also, so they're able to say, I'm going to plant, I'm going to take the resources of the earth, and I'm going to depend on God. So they get their wealth from their hard labor. But because also the mode of passion gives one ahankara vimutha makarta hamiti manyate, the mode of passion, ignorance, gives you the mood of I'm the doer. So the Vaishyas can very much think it's my planting that's doing it. It's my fertilizing. It's my endeavor that's doing it, plus the grace of God. So that's how they can get their wealth. The Kshatriyas, who don't have as much of the mode of ignorance, they're much able to work for a faraway goal and less in this, a little bit less in the mood of the doer as the Vaishyas. And there can be much more in the mood of I'm serving the people. I'm taking care of the people. And like the Vaishya, they're seeing a relationship that if I take care of the people nicely, they'll make a lot of money and they'll have taxes to give me. Like if I take care of the land nicely, the land will be fertile and produce, and I'll have something. With the Shudra, it's immediate. I make the pot, here's the pot, I sell it. With the Vaishya and Kshatriya, it's much more long-term. But they're having a real relationship, which is motivating them. As Prabhupada says, you don't take care of the people, you can't collect taxes. You don't grow the food, you can't eat. You're seeing some relationship, and this is very Rajaguna, you're seeing some relationship between what I'm doing and what I'm getting. Now the Brahmanas and Satyaguna, they don't have so much this mood of I'm the doer. They're not thinking so much I'm doing, therefore I'm getting. I'm just doing, and I don't ask for anything. I don't ask for taxes. I don't even ask from the earth. Whatever you want to give. With the Kshatriyas, they can set a fixed rate. They can say, okay, 25% of your income. Of course, it's 25% of the income, which is uncertain, and depends to a large extent on how the kshatriyas take care of them. But with the brahmanas, they don't even say that. Even if they're going to give you medical care, astrological care, or they're teaching you, or whatever, they don't say, okay, fixed rate. They don't say 25% of your income. They don't say anything. Even if they ask, even if they're accepting charity, they say, whatever you want to give. So either they don't ask at all, they're not required to even ask. The brahmanas are not required even to ask. They can just give their services, whatever they get, and if they ask, they just say, you give whatever you want. The kshatriyas do not say, you give whatever you want. And the vaishyas are not in the mood of, it's whatever, you know, whatever comes, that's not the mood. And the shudras are setting the price and bargaining over a price. And you can see that if a brahmana were to take this mood of it's got to be 25%, or it's got to be a set price, then they're going to become influenced by Rajaguna and Tamaguna, which is not where they fit. It's fine for one who's already in Rajaguna or Tamaguna to act according to that nature. That's fine. That's good. In fact, if someone who's in Rajaguna or Tamaguna tries to act artificially in Sattvaguna, they're not going to do it. It's not going to work. It's like trying to drive a boat like it's a car. You know, it's not going to work. But we were just studying in London how in Vasistha was acting as a professional priest and charging his disciples a certain amount, he became influenced by the mode of ignorance and cursed his disciple Prasiddha for an accidental sin. So as soon as the brahmana says, you've got to pay me a set amount, boom, ignorance. Immediately ignorance. That's what the shudra does. The shudra says, you have to pay me a set amount for my pots. You have to pay me a set amount for my dancing. You have to pay me a set amount for my music, whatever. As soon as the brahmana does that, finish. Or the kshatriya. If the kshatriya starts taking a salary, like, you know, our president gets a salary from the government. He gets a salary no matter how good of a president he is. But if instead one had to take care of the citizens and the natural bounty that accrued from that care, you got a percentage of that, then you'd want people to be bountiful. And then there's also the duty not just to enjoy, but the duty is, again, this nitya yagya pratisthitam. So the brahmanas are not just supposed to enjoy playing with knowledge. They're supposed to protect that knowledge. They're supposed to keep that knowledge pure. And this is another very good reason why the brahmanas don't get under the employ of somebody or ask a set amount of money, because as soon as you're employed by somebody, getting a set amount of money that you depend on for set expenses, your truthfulness will be compromised, definitely 100% guaranteed. One cannot speak truthfully to the person who's maintaining them. It just doesn't happen. And you will not be able to protect knowledge. Kshatriyas have to protect the people materially and spiritually. Again, if the kshatriyas are getting a salary and they think that salary is coming from business, then they lose the ability to protect. Even the vaishyas, so many farmers today are in the employ of some bigger business. And therefore they lose the ability to be the protectors of Mother Earth, the wife of God. And even the shudras, one's heart breaks for the shudras. One's heart breaks for the shudras in the factories where all of their skills and their craft and their satisfaction have been taken away. I mean, you think about, you know, you go to your house, all the beautiful furniture. Just looking at that beautiful handmade furniture elevates your consciousness. Yes. Look at something beautiful like this. Your consciousness is elevated. What to speak of the people doing it. So as soon as people are in that situation, it's hard for them to protect. So shudras are meant to protect the arts and the skills. The vaishyas are meant to protect the land and the cows and the water and the air. The kshatriyas are meant to protect the people, and the brahmanas are meant to protect truth. By the way, as a side note, this is one reason why there was always competitions. Why did the brahmanas debate? Why do the kshatriyas fight? Why is there competition in the marketplace? Why are there competitions in sporting events and in art events and music and so forth? This is to keep things at a high level when you've probably said competition keeps life. When you have this competition, then it also helps to protect and restore the truth. All right, now, then we've looked at why, because it's in the modes, and what one is attracted to play with, and what one should protect, and then how one earns one's livelihood. What about for whom? For whom are you sacrificed? Protecting the truth is a sacrifice. I want to play with the truth, but protecting the truth is a sacrifice. I want to take care of people. I want to play with care of people, but protecting people is the sacrifice. I want to play with wealth. Protecting the earth and the cows is a sacrifice. I want to play with art and function. Protecting it is a sacrifice. For whom am I sacrificing? If I'm only sacrificing for me, if I think I am the enjoyer of the sacrifices, my pleasure will be minuscule. If I think, as Prabhupada explains in one book, I can't remember the name of it, it's a book on Ramanan Samvada that Prabhupada wrote in India that one of my god brothers published. And Srila Prabhupada explains there that materialistic varnashram means you're sacrificing for the virat rupa. I'm doing this for the planet. I'm doing it for the universe. I have my role in the universal body. Then you're something. You're touching Krishna. We call that, in sociology, we call that functionalism. I have a function. I'm protecting the earth because that's my function in the ecology. That's my function, to be part of the whole. Higher than that is I'm sacrificing for my purification, for my liberation. I'm sacrificing for Brahman. Then we're touching sattva. And higher than that, of course, is what we are trying to do. Yajnartad karmano natra loko yam karma bandana tadatam karma kanteya mukta sangha samachara. That we're trying to sacrifice for Krishna. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam. That whatever, when we protect knowledge, when we protect arts and skills, when we protect people, when we protect natural resources, whether we're generating wealth as a Vaishya, whether we're using wealth as a Shudra and transforming it, or whether we're collecting and redistributing wealth as a Kshatriya or a Brahmana, the person who's enjoying is Krishna. Krishna, may you be happy. 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 And we become happy by seeing Krishna happy. So that is the for what. And then why? Why do I want Krishna to be happy? Do I want Krishna to be happy because then I can go to Swarga? If Krishna is happy, then I'll be prosperous in the world. I'll go to the heavenly planets as Karma Yoga. Do I want Krishna to be happy so I'll be liberated and purified as Jnana Yoga? Or do I want Krishna to be happy just because I want Krishna to be happy as Bhakti Yoga?
Out of gratitude.
Gratitude also. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati says something interesting about gratitude. I don't remember exactly the source. But that could be, it could be out of gratitude still with wanting to enjoy the world, or out of gratitude for liberation, or it could be gratitude and love. Because there's different kinds of gratitude. You know, when there's a gratitude out of love, then it's part of the loving relationship. But it's possible to have gratitude in other modes. But thank you for bringing out about gratitude. So let's say as devotees, I want to know, how do I connect my livelihood to Krishna? So first I've got to figure out, what's my toy? What do I like to play with? What kind of thing, when I work with it, do I go into flow? Where's my place? What is my identity in this world? It's not my eternal identity. What is my identity? You could say, why do we have to ask what's our upadhi? But you have to ask what's your upadhi. As Prabhupada says here at 9:30, you have to ask, what car am I driving? You have to ask that question. Recently, when I was in Europe, I was driving someone else's car. We drove through Germany to Belgium, and then where did we drive again? Oh, through Portugal and Spain. So you have to know how the car works. Right? I'm not the car. I got to figure out how the car works, otherwise I can't drive it. So what kind of upadhi do I have? Then, what do I sacrifice? I take this tendency of, this is the thing I want to enjoy, and I protect it. I then accept getting my livelihood, if I'm a grahasta, in the way according to that sacrifice. I do it for Krishna's pleasure, simply out of love. Now, what becomes fascinating when you do that is Namcha Yoga Vicharita Bhakti Yoga in Sevate Sadhunan Samatit Chaitanya Brahmabhuyaya Kalpate. Then you're not impassioned ignorance any longer. Isn't that fascinating? You're no longer under any modes. Therefore, a Vaishnava is not a Sudra or a Vaishya or a Kshatriya or even a Brahmin. A Vaishnava is completely on a different platform. And then you may say, well, why bother with this at all? Forget it. Okay. If you can go from the Brahmacharya ashram directly to the Vanaprastha ashram and Sannyasa ashram, then you are welcome to forget it. Because Brahmacharyas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis do not have a livelihood. Especially Vanaprasthas and Sannyasis should only be doing the 64 angas of bhakti. And whatever, however Krishna wants to maintain them is his business. They're not doing anything for a while. So yes, that is possible. But I think we've seen practically in our Hare Krishna movement that that's not very practical. We've had many, many people who tried to jump over that flight of stairs. The Prabhupada talks about the monkeys wanting to jump over to Lanka. And the monkeys saying, I can do it, I can do it. But they couldn't do it. So if you're going to jump over that flight of stairs of the Grahastha ashram, then you have to have the capacity to do that. And that's fine. If you can do that, one should be encouraged to do that. But for most of us who cannot do that, most of us have a time in our lives from approximately age 15, 25 to 50, 55, where we want to work in the world. We want to earn a livelihood. We want to contribute to the world. And we want to play with the things that we want this. And we do. So that's all right. That's okay. Here's how to do it. Okay? You want to do that? Here's how to do it. What do I get my enjoyment from? What makes me in flow? Okay? Take that and protect it. Don't just enjoy it, protect it. Take care of it. Get your livelihood from it in a way that matches the activity. Give it to Krishna for his pleasure only, simply out of love. Sorry, I've gone a little late. Questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Yes?
That way the conclusion is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that manasa deho dehe jo kuch mul hohe arpidu tuva pade nanda kishore.
Very nice. Thank you.
In the 248 report,
what's the verse? No. 248? Yoga sta karmani sangam dananjaya siddhya siddhyo samo buddhva samatvam yoga uchite.
Last paragraph.
Last paragraph. Arjuna is a kshatriya, and as such he is participating in the Varnashram Dharma institution. It is said in the Vishnu Purana that in the Varnashram Dharma the whole aim is to satisfy Vishnu. No one should satisfy himself, as is the rule in the material world, but one should satisfy Krishna. So unless one satisfies Krishna, one cannot correctly observe the principles of Varnashram Dharma. Indirectly, Arjuna was advised to act as Krishna told him.
So in that place, Prabhupada defines Varnashram in terms of whether or not you're doing it to satisfy Krishna.
So you're saying in that place, Prabhupada defines Varnashram as doing it to satisfy Krishna.
Yeah.
you're not really participating in ashram. Therefore, the bottom line of varnashram would have to be at least that you're connected with the Virat Rupa. That would have to be the bottom line. Because we see in modern society, there are still people who are inclined in each of these ways.
They're not in varnashram.
But they're not in varnashram because they're not protecting that thing. Right? So there's still government, there's still business, but they're not protecting it. They're not gaining their livelihood in the proper way, and they're not doing it to satisfy even the Virat Rupa, what to speak of Bhagavan.
Well, I would say that was a little bit of an interpretation. It doesn't say the Virat Rupa, it says Krishna.
It says Krishna. Well, because Prabhupada in Bhagavad Gita is always pushing us all to Bhagavan.
Exactly.
I'm not suggesting that any of our present audience just try to satisfy the Virat Rupa. I don't even suggest anyone here just try to satisfy the Brahman. Go for Bhagavan.
One more point.
Yes, Maharaj.
You were talking about the Brahmins, the Sannyasis, I guess in extension guru, you could say. What is it that causes them to have difficulty? You were talking at one point.
I was talking about Vasistha, how Vasistha had difficulty. Yeah. Yeah, me too.
When I first started
me too.
You know, the first time they came in to do Guru Puja, I tried to get them out the door. I just couldn't handle it, you know. And then I realized while it was happening, because I couldn't get out the door, I was stuck. So then inside myself, I started, you know, praying to Prabhupada to accept this, to, you know, to take it so that it didn't stay stuck in my heart. I realized that this was the thing, that if I don't do that, then the effect accumulates in the heart, and then ultimately, Rupa Goswami says, don't initiate too many disciples.
Right.
What that means is, if you can't do that,
it's going to accumulate.
It's going to accumulate and crush you.
And crush you. So just repeat what Maharaj heard, especially for those people on the internet. So Keshav Bhai Maharaj was saying that in regard to what I mentioned about Vasistha, that he was finding when he was initiating disciples, that when people would offer him, someone offered him Guru Puja, he wanted to run out the door, but he couldn't run out the door. And then he realized that he had to give that offering up,
consciously
give the offering up to Srila Prabhupada, or else it would accumulate and pull him down.
If you stop doing that, then you're no longer in the varnashram system.
If as soon as you don't do that, you're not even in the varnashram system. Well, it's interesting, though, because when we talked about this verse with Vasistha in London, we were talking about how a Brahmana, what to speak of a Vaishnava, should just be this conduit. You know, you're getting energy from samsara dava nana loka. You're getting from Krishna, and you're just the conduit to give to people, and the people are getting from Krishna, and they're the conduit to give to you. So, you know, and you're taking what they give and you're giving back to Krishna. So Krishna's giving you knowledge and ability, which you're giving to people. And Krishna's giving it, and then they're giving it to Krishna, hopefully. And Krishna's giving to them, and they're giving to you, and you're giving to Krishna.
Yeah, and that's part of what it means, receiving charity and giving charity.
Receiving and giving charity in general. Interestingly enough, though, that even the Shudras are meant to develop this mentality. That everybody is meant to develop this mentality.
Yeah, that's varnashram.
That is varnashram. That I'm taking from Krishna, bhumirapanalova yukamano buddhivacha. I'm taking from Krishna this piece of wood, and I'm turning it into a beautiful table. Or I'm taking from Krishna my life breath and turning it into a beautiful song. The Shudras are mostly into transforming energy. Transforming love. Then I'm sharing that as a sacrifice to please Krishna. And then Krishna's giving people who then pay me a salary, which I then use for Krishna. Yes?
And on top of that, you have the verse in which Krishna says, satisfying my devotees, satisfies them more than satisfying me.
Oh, now you're going to take this to a whole other level.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll be here till 11. Maharaj just said, satisfied my devotees is higher than satisfying me. Well, you see that with all these varnas, the concept is that you're serving You're serving the population. The word here is praja. Everybody is serving the praja. If you're the brahmanas, you're serving the praja by educating them in spiritual values, teaching them practical bhakti like deity worship. If you're kshatriya, you're serving the praja by providing them with food, clothing, medical, electric, education, and engaging them in sacrifice. If you're a vaishya, you're serving the praja by generating wealth for the society. If you're a sudra, you're serving the praja by generating beauty and functional items for the society. But you're doing that not to please them independent of Krishna. As soon as you try to please any living entity or any group of living entities independently from Krishna, it's illusion. But you're pleasing them so Krishna will smile.
I think that verse that Jennifer quoted about the Shastra.
Amanasa Deha Geha.
Krishna's home,
Krishna's wife,
Krishna's
kids.
So I'm just a caretaker. I'm just taking care of
the caretaker, yes.
That's transcendental varnashram.
Yes. And then, then we have to say, if you're transcendental, why are you doing varnashram altogether? Again, because honestly, most of us need that support. Most of us are going to have an occupation. Most of us are going to have a family. Now, the other question becomes, can you have an occupation in a family without exactly following this varnashram, because it's pretty hard to follow it exactly in the present day? Yes, of course. But if following the system makes it so much easier. Anybody else? Question? Yes, please.
I think a lot about this stuff. Being thrust into the grihastha ashram and having to maintain myself quite late in life. It's been... But Krishna says, hello, Subhasambhavaya, we're all born less than children in Hollywood. So how important really is it that we get into the details of how society works and et cetera? Because we see that, as you said in the early part of the class, all of these tendencies, beta tendencies, are there in the different occupations that we all take up for one reason or another. But it all still boils down to surrender to Krishna and rise above the entire platform of the most mature nature. So as the microcosm that ISKCON is, or even the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya has figured out, it's very, very limited, very small piece of what's existing now in Kali Yuga on this planet. How important is all that if we really just have to come to the point of surrendering to Krishna?
Okay, how important is all this in our little microcosm? It's not very important in the sense that bhakti is independent of things like varna and ashram. So even if you don't fit nicely into one of these categories, and even if you do, but you can't live like this. So let's say you figured out you're a brahmana, and you're a college professor, and you're teaching even bhakti yoga in college. Well, you know what? You're going to be drawing a salary. I mean, I just had an interesting thing happen where I was asked by one devotee-run school to come and do some service. And they said, we can pay for your airfare. And I said, I'm traveling with my grandson. Could you pay his airfare? And they said, well, no, we couldn't do it like that. They said, what we could do is if you invoice us for your services, then we could pay you something and you can use it for whatever you want. So I said, well, I'm not going to invoice anybody for my services because I don't function like that. I'm not looking for a livelihood. I said, I'll accept random donations, but I won't accept, some kind of a salary or a payment. I said, if you want to give me a random donation, that's fine. Random means you don't know who's going to give you something, you don't know if they're going to give you something, you don't know how much they're going to give you. You go some places, nobody gives you a penny, and you go other places, somebody gives you $1,000, and you just never know. And he said, well, we can't do it like that. He said, legally, we can't. He said, legally, we're not allowed to give donations. He said, the only way we could do anything is if you have an invoice. So this is the problem. You know, if you're a Brahmana and you're working for a university and you say, well, I'm not going to accept the salary because that'll interfere with my Brahminical principles, but you can give me a random donation whenever you want. They'll say, sorry, we don't know how to do that with our accounting software. You know, we don't have anything in our accounting software for, we don't have a random donation category. You know, and the students aren't trained like that. Your undergraduate students, they're not going to be giving you donations either. If they're paying their tuition to the school and they figure that your salary is going to come from that, and they're not going to give you anything. Right? I mean, seriously, you could be teaching college for 3 years and not one of your students would give you a penny. They wouldn't even give you a bag of rice or something, you know. They wouldn't give anything. And we also have the problem, like when I ran a Gurukula, that if you just say, well, just give whatever you want, and then people, then they will, if they're dealing with devotees, then they will give you a bag of rice. Or a sari. And you take that to the bank, and okay, I want to pay the mortgage on our Gurukul building. Here's a sari and a bag of rice, and it doesn't work very well. So it's very difficult. Modern society has made it extremely, extremely difficult to live without getting a set salary. We also have fixed expenses. Not only are there not mechanisms in place to compensate you other than fixed salaries, it's not in the accounting software, but we also tend to have fixed expenses. As soon as you have fixed expenses, you have to get a fixed salary, unless you're really an amazing person without any fear at all. You know, you've got responsibilities for a family and so forth. The people who live without fixed salaries, they didn't pay a mortgage. They lived under a tree, or they built a straw hut where there was no mortgage. You know, and they dug a well and there was no water bill. Well, they won't even let you do that here. If you wanted to have a property here and you said, you know, I'm just going to build a straw hut without a mortgage, they're going to say it doesn't meet the building codes and take it down. So it's extremely difficult to live without fixed expenses. You know, I can live without fixed expenses because I have no home and I have no car. So, you know, I easily live without fixed expenses, and therefore I can live without just with whatever is given to me randomly. But not everybody wants to be a nomad, especially when you're a grihastha. You don't want to be a nomad. So how important are all these things? Oh, well, not very much. But we should try to understand the principle and do it as far as possible, because these things are given by God, and they're given by the acharyas. And they're not giving them to us simply to waste our time. Prabhupada isn't asking us to speak on every verse in the Bhagavatam to waste our time. This is a verse in the Bhagavatam. We're going through reading it. So these principles obviously have some importance. So try to pull out the principle as far as possible. So what I see the principle is do some work that's according to your nature. Even if you can do somebody else's work very well, very expertly, do the work that's your nature. Even if you can't do it as expertly as something that's not your nature. Then do that work with the idea of protecting, not just enjoying, of protecting and sacrificing. Whatever your work is, do it as a sacrifice, with the idea of protection. And offer the sacrifice to Krishna. And as far as you possibly can, try to have your income in line with your work. Try to have the method of your getting your income in line with your work, if you possibly can. And if you can't, then recognize that you're putting a burden on your consciousness. And be at least aware of that fact, so that you can at least pray and make some adjustment for it. Don't be unconscious. So if you're doing Brahminical Satriya or Vaishya work, and you're in someone's employ, and you're getting a set salary, be consciously aware that that means of livelihood is going to affect you. Don't just be blind to it. Is that all right? But ultimately, we're interested in bhakti. And we're interested in learning these things only because we're making a livelihood anyway, and we're having a family anyway. And we'd like to know, what is the best way to do that, that I can connect with Krishna? Is that okay? Yes, that's all.
Well, I think you've summed it up. But I was just going to say that there's so many details that you could consider, but you explain the spirit Varnashram very nicely. And that's what we can become caught up in. Even though there's the details may be different, the situation, the time, the place may be very different than what is described here in Srimad-Bhagavatam. The spirit is there, the principle.
Yes. And if we can't, if we're not able to follow some detail that we know is it makes a difference, again, we should be aware of it. We should at least be aware that this thing is influencing. It's something like, let's say you go for a medical procedure and they give you some painkiller that affects your consciousness. At least you have to know there's something that's affecting my consciousness, therefore I shouldn't drive. Or I should be careful what I do because they've given me this medication. Does that make sense? So in a similar way, if one's in a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya type occupation, and one is in someone's employ and getting a set salary, one should understand that doing that is going to affect our ability to protect what we're supposed to protect. That there's going to be a tendency to try to please that employer separately from Krishna, out of fear for my own maintenance and the maintenance of my family. And that fear may push me to act in ways that are not sacrificing for Krishna and are not pleasing Krishna, and that influence is there in my life, and that I need to make some kind of compensation for that and some awareness for that. I need to deal with that at least consciously. Is that all right? Not to be unconscious, even if we can't be in the, who of us is in an ideal situation? I haven't met anybody in an ideal situation. Maybe there's 10 or 20 people on the planet, but, who is the perfect brahmacharya, the perfect sannyasi, the perfect vannaprastha, the perfect sakya, the perfect anything? Forget it. Just forget it. It's not going to happen. So, we're going to go back to what I said in the beginning. We still have yakarosha, yadanashi, yatahasadasi, yadatahasasi, yakante, yatakuntra. Whatever you do. Imperfect in so many ways. What do I have that's perfect? Hare Krishna. Here, Krishna, it's what I have. I don't have anything else. Sanatana Goswami, all I got are these bread balls, Lord. I don't have any salt. That's what I have. You're going to take it or not? That's what I have. Is that all right? Yes, Prabhu.
Why is it that Krishna describes the parampara in terms of shaktis rather than brahmanas? It says, Krishna gave me the knowledge of Gita to Vivashvan and to Manu and Ikshvaku, to kings, not to brahmanas. He didn't give it to the sages.
So why did Krishna give the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to Kshatriyas instead of to brahmanas when it's brahmanas' business to protect the truth? It's a very good question. Perhaps it's because the brahmanas cannot protect the truth unless the kshatriyas take care of it. That if the kshatriyas aren't devoted to the truth, even though it's not their business to protect it directly, they're not going to take care of those brahmanas. Like here it's saying in today's verse, one's not supposed to tax the brahmanas. Why? We have an interesting situation here in America where we have, in the Constitution, it says the Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor any law prohibiting the establishment of religion. In other words, leave religion alone. Okay, government, leave religion alone. It's not your dominion. You can't create a church, and you can't stop a church. It's not your business. Your business is to protect religion. So in this kind, of course, they don't know what religion is, and therefore they can't protect it. This is the problem. So we have a government who's charged to protect religion, but they don't know what's a religion and what's not a religion. If someone says, our religion is to take peyote, they're not sure if that's a religion or not. They can't figure it out. Basically, if you say you're a religion, you're a religion. So the kshatriyas have to understand, how are they going to protect the brahmanas? Brahmanas have to be protected. They're just studying and worshipping the deities. How are they going to protect truth unless they have that shelter? So I see that's... Of course, the brahmanas also, there's the disciplic succession of the brahmanas. But the Krishna especially wants the kings to understand, even though that's not their main area of protection, directly, They have to protect it indirectly. Is that all right? Or do you have some other thoughts?
I would say also that they protect the culture.
They're protecting the culture.
The culture supports the religion.
I really like that. Because one thing that's fascinated me is that many times when Prabhupada talks about the duties of a kshatriya, he talks about Brahminical culture. You'll see that combined. The duties of kshatriyas, they have to protect Brahminical culture. You're thinking, wait a minute, kshatriyas have their own culture. Each varna has its own culture. So why is Prabhupada doing that? Because the Brahmanas can't protect it independently. And we see this all over the world. We see if there's a repressive government, it's very difficult for religious people to function, yes? It's extremely difficult for religious people to function in a repressive government. The Brahmanas have a hard time doing that themselves. They don't want to be involved in that. They don't want to get out swords and shields and atom bombs. Yes,
really? Just to that, when you consider the position of the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam in Kaliyuga, and you read the stories again and again, constantly Krishna is involving himself in adjusting the kshatriyas. Constantly. And the whole lineage of the Bhagavatam, everyone that's discussed there, is a particular family, according to Hanuman Sakaswami. It's really this one family that is following. These are the chosen ones that have to keep maintaining peace and unity in the universe. And only God can do that. I mean, only Krishna is in a position that he can adjust society. Bhagavad Gita, what happens? All the kshatriyas are gone. The Shabda, all the kshatriyas are gone. The Brahmanas repopulate the world with the kshatriya wife to create a better quality of kshatriya. It goes on and on and on like that, because as you were saying, without the kshatriyas being in the proper position, nothing works. They're the top in terms of maintaining and protecting. The Brahmanas have the knowledge, but they can't have it unless they're left alone.
That's right.
To cultivate.
So, that is beautiful.
I think that
is just beautiful. Wow. I'm glad we went this late. That was worth every syllable. Wow. Thank you. But I do think we should stop now so we can do another kind of yagya. Yagya shustasina santo mochante sarvako vishay vunjite te jagam papaye prachantiat makaranat and take prasadam. Srila Prabhupada, keep doing it.